So we get to select one sentence in chapter 4, and that we believe that, you know, represents the main points of the chapter. Very good. And I picked chapter 4, page 57, maybe like the second paragraph, well, on the other side, second paragraph. And it says, what this comes down to is that the only way to think about IQs and many other sampling results is in ranges. I think it kind of like represents the whole chapter, just because everything is like that we talk about in the book is kind of in groups and categories. And ranges more is the like, it's from a certain set to another certain set, meaning that anything between kind of falls like in it. So I think that kind of has something to do with like the whole chap, like with the whole main point of the chapter, because like chapter 4 kind of talks about basically like I kept seeing something come up like estimation error with like a probability of 0.05, and I don't know. Like, it comes in ranges, so it can be anything from a certain number to another certain number, if that makes sense.
Ignoring these errors, which are implicit in all sampling studies, has led to some remarkable silly behavior. This is located on page 57 at the bottom on the third paragraph. It's the first sentence. I feel like with statistics on a product, especially it's just like if somebody came up with a hairspray and this hairspray was supposed to make your hair grow, and statistically your hair will probably grow in like 2 months if you use it every day. But that can just be the average. We forget about the other natural effects of how hair grows, because everybody hair doesn't grow in the same pace. And that's not taken into the results of the hair growth by using this hairspray. It can also be with other products as well, like soap, like Proactive, that you can see results in 30 days, but that's just the average. And it also depends on the person, because it may take longer.
So Mr. Moles also left another comment on our other podcast, stating that Chapter 5 talks about the wrong way to make a picture graph, and is there a right way? And personally, I do believe, it is the right way to make a picture graph, just because, kind of related to the quote I used for chapter 4, like, the ranges on graphs can have a big difference of what we actually interpret. So, it could be a percentage change or something, for example. Like, the range of the graphs can vary from different graphs to graphs. So, I mean, sometimes picture graphs have different starts and ends, so I guess that's like a different way why everybody interprets a graph something else. And it's not like math related, but like I know like in physics when I like SAT or something, and the kids each, we had like an activity where each of the kids was like doing some type of trying to see how far to get back to the baseline, and each person started from a different baseline. So some people start from zero, but some people start from like say negative 400 or something, and that's just how it was. So yeah.
So our next question by Mr. Miles is what a semi-figure attachment is. So
semi-attached figure, yeah. So it's like, I guess, drawing irrelevant conclusion. And I guess what I get out of it is basically like a conclusion or something like, obviously, that you need evidence for in order to present it. And I guess what they mean like irrelevant is that if you draw a conclusion but you don't have any evidence, then it's irrelevant to the conclusion because you don't have any evidence to back what you're saying up. So if I'm over here spitting lies out and don't have any, and I come to a conclusion like, oh, well, this person scored an 80, but I don't have any evidence to it, then it's irrelevant because my conclusion can be false. And yeah, a semi-attached figure. So our question from Mr. Miles is, what is a What does post hoc mean?
Post hoc is when data is collected after an event. So basically, like if a sports team, after they had played the game, a person will calculate how many times each player scored. And most of the time, they usually go back and rewatch the game to see. But there's also errors with that because sometimes you may miscalculate by a few points, and that can sometimes that doesn't help out with the average because someone who may have played in the game only made four shots, which is 2 points, so that's 8 points towards the team. If you miscalculate that, you can get 10 or 6, and then their average will be off point. So that's what a post hoc is. Our last question that we got asked by Mr. Miles is, Chapter 8 warns against the dangers of exploitation. What is one example the author uses in this discussion?
Well, my take on what Mr. Miles is trying to ask is basically like exploitation is like predicting something, like a phenomenon. Like, I wouldn't call it a proposition because I don't think that's the right word to use. Some of these phenomena that lies outside the basis of experience. And, okay, maybe an example of that would be, okay, track and field. And we have, say, for example, a 1 mile race, and we look at the table of record times for that, you know, that 1 mile race. But if it's been like a downward trend, we can see a linear function because it's going, you know, it's declining on a steady, you know, at a constant rate. But if we, I guess, extrapolate and try to see what this trend would be like in, say, another 20 years for us. Like, I'm talking about SLA students still. Like, in another 20 years, maybe somebody can run it at a lower constant rate, but that can't be true because that's not really valid because you can't really see in the future and you can't really predict something, even if it's going on a downward trend, because you might get someone that's like Bolt, whatever his name, Usain Bolt or something, and just like mess everyone up, and that's like his running skill. So you see what I'm saying? Like, you can't predict something that's in the future. That's my take on it. Since we have a couple minutes left, I think we should talk about basically what was our favorite chapter of High Level Statistics. It was a really interesting book.
For me, I would say chapter 7 was kind of interesting because in that chapter, it basically showed like the target of populations and groups and the study like population, like how they can actually use statistics to emerge people to believe certain things just by using like just fake examples. Just like I said about like the hairspray thing or like the proactive thing, like conducting studies on people and seeing how it works, but in average it's not going to be the same time as it is for someone else. So both people won't get the same effect and same results by using the same product at the same time. But statistically in the commercial or in the ad, it states that you will. And sadly people really believe that. But.
Right. I think for me, I have to go way, way back. And I think it's kind of like our first chapter when he's talking, like a couple of first pages when he's talking about, like, just his Yale study. I think that was, like, a really interesting thing just to hear that from someone else's point of view. And not only that, like my favorite part of chapter 1, I believe, had to be, okay, I'm going to read this sentence. It says, like, a psychiatrist reported once that practically everybody is neurotic, aside from the fact that such use destroys any meaning of the word neurotic. Take a look at the man's sample. That is whom has the psychiatrist been observing. And it's, like, it makes so much sense. Like, it makes so much sense that people really just can't draw a conclusion from anything. And, I mean, like, just from that, say, example, he's talking about, like, who has the psychiatrist ever seen. Like, he might have just seen, like, all people that's, like, absorbed with themselves or people that are really crazy from the nut house or something. And, I mean, that kind of gives me, like, a basis for my life. Like, I'm not going to believe anything no one says without their evidence in my face. So, that's my best chapter.